everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a New Comics Wednesday episode for February 7th, 2018. But before I get into the books that I want to spotlight for this New Comics Wednesday, I just want to remind everybody of the Skyward Kickstarter that's going on. It is Jeremy Dale, the late great. It's his Skyward series. It's being produced by his widow, Kelly. And the Kickstarter is currently at 59% as of this date. Kelly just announced some really cool stretch goals that she's added to the Kickstarter just because the reception and support have been so great. You know, there's 29 days to go and she's 60% of the way there. So I'm going to play a little bit of the interview from the Kickstarter Comic Source special episode to give you an idea, and all the information is contained there. And yeah, I'll go ahead and play it. You can give it a listen.
Well, you mentioned Skyward. I mentioned it as well. You know, I've talked about it on the other podcast, but maybe some of our listeners aren't that familiar. So why don't you tell them what Skyward's all about?
Sure. For those of you that don't know, Skyward is one of those all ages light fantasy adventure about a boy and his dog that need to unite the entire world against the dark army of the Brother Kings. If you like things like Legends of Zelda or like Lord of the Rings, it's right up your alley. This is a little less like adult than something like Game of Thrones.
Why don't you let us know what this Kickstarter that you have going, and there will be a link in the show notes and all this information, everyone, so don't worry. But why don't you tell us, Kelly, what the Kickstarter is actually going to be funding?
Okay, so because we're talking Skyward, Jeremy created Skyward to be an ongoing series. I mean, he had this sucker planned out until at least issue 50. And it kind of saddens me that you guys don't get to see what his grand idea was. But he left issue 9 on such a cliffhanger that I felt like it was my responsibility as his good wife, as well as a fan of Skyward, to at least bring out an issue 10. So that way it will give us all a little bit of closure. Now, it doesn't actually end the series. So in your imagination, you can keep it going. And if I ever decide to do anything with it later in maybe another medium, then I can. But this will give all the fans a little bit of closure. So issue 10 is going to be a 32-page issue. I took Jeremy's ideas for issue 10, and I went to our friend Barbara Kessel, the comic writer and editor, and she actually developed a script that works. And then Shannon Gallant, amazing man that he is, also a G.I. Joe artist, drew the entire issue. And now it's at the colors with Catherine Leno and Laura Martin. And what I decided to do was I don't want there just to be an issue 10 and that's it. So I did a Kickstarter for the Jeremy Dale Skyward Omnibus. So that Omnibus is going to cover issues 1 through 9. Plus you'll get issue 10 in there. And you're going to get all of the variant cover arts by all the different artists Jeremy had, such as Phil Noto, Darwin Cook, Stefan Rue, Tom Zoller, Mike Norton, David Peterson. I mean, it's a huge list.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about kind of the business end of Kickstarter, because I know people sometimes don't realize the way that it works. And, you know, even though it's only been a week or so and it's already at 57%, I know a lot of times there's a lot of excitement early on and you know, it gets to 80 or 90% and it kind of dies out. So if you're planning on pledging, do it sooner than later, because it doesn't get produced unless it gets to 100%. So
yeah. Well, and I'm glad that you brought this up, because some people don't realize when it comes to Kickstarter, you can pledge whatever you want. Like, you can do an incentive. Your card, your credit card, is not charged until we hit our end date, which is March 8th. And if we hit the 100%, if we hit that $20,000 or we're above it. So if you're thinking about, well, I would really like to donate or do an incentive, but I don't get paid until next week, that's fine. Just go ahead and grab the incentive, especially if it's one of the ones that there's only one of. Grab it now. You're not actually going to be charged until March 8th.
Yeah, and it's so easy. We're all so busy. It's so easy to forget. So Do it. Open another tab right now while you're listening to this, or if you're in the car, you know, as soon as you get where you're going, as soon as you finish listening to the podcast. Don't get on your phone while you're driving, but yeah, do it sooner than later, because it's really easy to forget. So,
And truthfully, the reception has been amazing so far, and the outpouring of love and support has been amazing. But until we hit this 20,000, even though I'm very confident that we will, I'm going to still be like a little anxious and freaking out. So please don't let Kelly freak out.
All right. Just like Kelly said in the interview, be sure you go and pledge sooner than later. It's something you're not going to want to miss out on. All right. On to the comics for this episode. The first book I want to talk about is Swamp Thing Winter Special. This is actually an 80-page giant. It's got two stories in it. The first is written by Tom King, whose star is really on the rise, I guess you'd say. Art's by Jason Fabuck, and is absolutely incredible. And the colors are by Brett Anderson. Now, there's also a backup story in this 80-page giant, but it's not really a traditional comic story. And there's a pretty good reason for that. So Len Wein, many of you are aware, passed away last fall, and he's actually the co-creator of Swamp Thing, along with Bernie Wrightson, who passed away late last summer. So unfortunately, both creators of Swamp Thing are no longer with us. Recently, I think it started last year, the beginning of last year, a miniseries of Swamp Thing by Len Wein and Kelly Jones, who's most noted for his Batman work. So they had done the 6-issue miniseries, and I, even though I have the issues, I haven't gotten around to reading it. Manny's read it. He really liked it, and it's something I want to read at some point, and I just haven't. And part of the reason I want to read it is because Swamp Things is really one of those holes in my DC knowledge. You know, Sandman being another that I recently mentioned on the podcast. But, you know, the Alan Moore Swamp Thing run is considered, you know, one of the best runs of all time in comics. And it's just, for whatever reason, I've just never read it. Maybe it's partly due to the fact I don't really care much for horror comics. But lately, that's been kind of changing with some of the stuff I've been reading, like Black Eyed Kids from Aftershock. So anyway, Len Wein, Kelly Jones had put out this 6-issue miniseries, and it did well enough that they were actually planning to do a sequel. And unfortunately, as I mentioned, Len did pass away last fall, so he never got a chance to script the issue. He shared the plot and the page breakdowns with Kelly. Kelly did the art. It was colored by Michelle Madsen, but the dialogue's not there. The exposition, the dialogue boxes aren't there. So what DC decided to do is they published the art without putting any words at all. Just the finished art that Kelly Jones and Michelle Madsen had done. And then what they did is they published Len's script with the page and panel breakdowns in this 80-page giant as well. So you can kind of get the idea. I mean, Kelly Jones is a pretty good storyteller. So you kind of get an idea of what's going on already. But then when you read Len's script, it definitely enriches it. And I really wish he'd gotten a chance to write the dialogue for this issue. It would have made it, you know, just that much better. It's interesting. I haven't seen any of Kelly Jones' art in a while. It definitely suits Swamp Thing, but I was never a fan of his particular style. You know, I know he had a Batman run that's on Detective Comics that's critically acclaimed, but, you know, he tends to exaggerate certain features of characters. And I never really cared for it that much. So for me, that's kind of the weakest part of the story. But reading Len's script, I thought that was really, really cool, because you could just tell what a craftsman he was. All the little tidbits he put in, suggestions like the way he wants a character to rub the back of his neck or tilt his hat up, things like that. really stuck with me, and they're really the little details that he's giving the artist to kind of enhance the story and make it feel more real. So, as I said, it's a shame he didn't get to script it, but this is, you know, Len's last published work, most likely last new published work. I'm sure that his work will be in print for years and years and years to come, just based on, you know, the number of incredible creators that he had a hand in creating. You know, Wolverine, Swamp Thing, Colossus, Nightcrawler. I mean, the list goes on and on. So overall, I definitely would recommend the Swamp Thing Winter Special. The first story by Tom King and Jason Fabok, colors by Brett Anderson, as I mentioned, it's really interesting. I feel like I don't really get it, and that's kind of weird for me to say, being that I, you know, such a longtime comic reader, and I feel like I have a good handle on the art and the storytelling and, you know, the things that creators are trying to say. But maybe it's because I'm not that familiar with Swamp Thing and where he's at right now. I'm really just not sure. It's an interesting story, and as I said, the art is absolutely incredible. And Fabok, you know, he's a good storyteller. Facial expressions and panel layouts all kind of enhance the feel of the story. And Brett Anderson's colors do a good job of setting the tone. The whole story is basically told in a blizzard, sort of, which is kind of strange for, you know, you think Swamp Thing, green, plants growing, and all that plays into the story as well. Anderson's colors do a great job of almost making you feel that cold. So it was an interesting story. I'll probably read it again another time or two over the next week or so to see if I can have a better understanding of what exactly is going on. Another reason I wish Manny was here, he's actually knows more and has read more Swamp Thing than I have, but unfortunately he's under the weather. But that'll be interesting to see if I can get something more out of it, or maybe I'm not missing anything. Maybe there's just more Swamp Thing on the way, and this is setting the stage for it. Just not really sure, but I mean, it's worth buying just on the fact that it's Len Wein's last new published work, and the Fabok King story is absolutely beautiful to look at. It is an 80-page giant, so it is $7.99. Just, you know, I want you to have sticker shock when you go and see it on the shelf. The cover's amazing. Yeah, it's I think it's a good remembrance, a good way to honor Len. So, all right, next book I'm going to talk about is also a DC comic. It's Superman number 40, and it's part one of the Last Days storyline. And this is a new creative team on Superman. It's not Patrick Gleason and Peter J. Tomasi anymore. We've got James Robinson on the story, Doug Monkey on pencils, Jaime Mendoza and Scott Hanna on inks, and Will Quintana on colors. So, you know, I'm sure everyone's heard the news by now. Brian Michael Bendis is taking over Superman after issue 1000. Well, I should say taking over Action Comics after issue 1000. Both Action Comics and the Superman title are going to go on hiatus for 6 weeks, while just like John Byrne's six-issue Man of Steel series back in the mid-80s rebooted Superman, Bendis is coming in. He's going to do a six-issue weekly series called The Man of Steel, kind of give us a new status quo of Superman. He said he's not throwing anything out that's happened in the rebirth at all. Not going to get rid of anything Dan Jurgens did or any of that. He's not throwing the baby out with the bathwater. He's building on that, setting up a new kind of status quo, basically just telling the Superman story that he wants to tell. And the way they're setting that up is with this six-issue weekly miniseries. Coming out of that, we're going to have Action Comics 1001, written by Bendis. We're also going to have a new Superman number one, written by Brian Michael Bendis. I do wish they weren't rebooting Superman. I mean, numbers don't matter at this point. Can we just keep going with whatever it'll be, 45 or 46, whatever it is? But the whole reason I bring that up is I'm not sure if this Last Days series is going to run up until that reboot. Or that renumbering, I guess you should say. It's not a reboot because, again, he's not changed anything. So I'm not sure if this Last Days or if Peter J. Tomasi and Patrick Gleason are going to get to tell one more Superman story. There's been rumors of Tomasi going over to Detective Comics, and he has a long history with the Batman character, so I could easily see that. But I feel like a lot of people have given credit to Dan Jurgens for what he's done with Superman in the Rebirth. Superman, and I've said a bunch of times, as Superman goes, so DC goes. And DC's doing pretty well these days, and the Superman books are they're getting pretty good sales, and they're getting great critical reception. And I hear Jurgens' name and the Action Comics team, their names a lot. They're given a lot of credit for telling these great Superman stories. And I feel like the Superman title and what Tomasi and Gleason have done, it kind of plays second fiddle to that. And I want to make sure to give them their credit here because they've done an incredible job. You know, they're the ones that have really been focused on the family side of this Superman in the Rebirth, you know, with Lois and with their son, John, and really having some great father-son moments. The stories really have been family-centric, and I feel like that's central to part of the reason why the Superman books have been so popular lately compared to the new 52 version, certainly, and even before that. So definitely want to give them some credit. That being said, this Last Days story is very interesting by James Robinson. It's Doug Monkey art, so let me just say a little bit about that now. His art tends to be pretty good for me. I like his rendering and his line weights. His storytelling's great. He switches up the panel layouts enough to keep it interesting, I'll put it that way. If there's any problem I have with his art, is same problem I have with Gary Frank sometimes. Ethan Van Sciver's another one this really is the case. Probably Van Sciver and Monkey are probably the two artists that I have this complaint about. Sometimes I feel like they over-render things. There's too much detail, and it just doesn't look realistic. It starts to look just kind of weird. And so I feel like that there are pages, especially in people's faces, like Ethan Van Sciver's, the way he draws Sinestro's face a lot of times, it just kind of freaks me out. There's so many lines. They start to look like wrinkled and like old man-ish or something. And there's a few times with Superman's face with Monkey where I feel like it's the same thing. Or even with John, it's sometimes it's just too much. And it's like, whoa, dude, just back off a few less lines. And sometimes less is more. So, but for the most part, I'm a fan of Monkey's work. So the story itself is really interesting. It starts out, again, it's these father-son moments. So James Robinson kind of picking up the baton from Peter J. Tomasi and Patrick Gleason. So it's John and Superman. They're in the Fortress of Solitude. They actually watch a holographic recreation of the destruction of Krypton because it's the anniversary, the 40th anniversary, I think he says, of, or maybe they don't actually give a year. They just say it's the anniversary of the day Krypton exploded. So they watch that together. Takes about an hour. And then apparently Superman has had his sensors in his fortress scan the stars for years to alert him if there's ever another situation similar to the destruction of Krypton happening out there. And they find one, and of course Superman tells John, okay, you need to go home. But of course, John being John, come on, Dad, I want to go. I want to see space. I want to go with you. I want to help. And so Cal... Superman eventually relents, and they go to this planet to try to save them. And here's where it gets interesting. The planet and the people there are all of one religion, and they believe that if their planet is going to be destroyed or explode, that it's the will of their god, Dermet, D-H-E-R-M-E-T. And they're not going to leave, because if this is what is the will of their god, who are they to defy him? And Superman's like, what? This is insane. And again, they ask him to leave. They basically say that if he were a citizen of that planet, speaking that way about the religion, saying that it's insane, would be grounds for him to be executed for heresy. And so they say, leave or we'll attack you, basically. And Superman says, well, you know, I've scanned your planet, and unless you have magic or a red sun or kryptonite, you're not going to be able to stop me, because he's going to save them whether they like it or not. Which, that's where the interesting part comes in. Like, is it really Superman's place to say. Or maybe he's just saying, I don't know that you leaders speak for everyone. Maybe he just wants a chance to see if everyone agrees with this, if everyone's willing to die for their faith, basically. But somehow, I guess it's through telepathic means, because they're all of one faith, of one race, of sort of one mind. They have some kind of telepathic abilities, apparently. The aliens basically say, grab them, kill them. And John and Superman actually feel themselves getting weaker. And so before they can be completely overrun, they both kind of fly off to try to escape. They know they're not going to get very far. And in fact, they don't get very far before a hatch opens up in this, like a ravine. And one, there's another one of the aliens and says, hey, come inside quickly. The store won't hold them for long. And then we find out that this man is kind of reviled, and he's kind of an exile among his own people because he's a man of science. And none of that really matters now, though, because he wants to continue the existence of what he calls, quote unquote, his brainless myopic race. So he says, let's save this world together, shall we? And the issue ends. So very interesting. There's some moral questions to be answered there. It's interesting enough that apparently these aliens, through some kind of a hive mind, can affect Superman and John and weaken them, basically. So I'm looking forward to the continuation of this story. One that makes you think, plus the father-son stuff, plus it almost seems like Superman's getting emotionally involved, which, you know, it's kind of hard not to, just based on the fact that he's trying to save this world from being destroyed, and much like he couldn't save Krypton from being destroyed. So kind of in his eyes, I think probably a chance for redemption. So the next book I want to talk about is from Valiant. It's Armstrong and the Vault of Spirits, written by Fred Van Lente. We have Cafu and Derek Robertson as the artist, and colors by Andrew Dollhouse with Diego Rodriguez. So let me just say that in my opinion, there's no other writer who should ever write Archer and Armstrong other than Fred Van Lente. The way he goes back in time and tells kind of revisionist history is amazing. It's almost like you're getting like the real story of what happened in history. Like, we all know supposedly the stories and the way it happened, but then we go back and he always puts an interesting spin on it, injects it with humor, and, you know, puts Armstrong there as well. And he does it in such a way that we can totally see why history and the story we know is what it is, you know, supposedly the true story, but we could totally understand if it happened exactly the way Fred Van Lente is portraying it as happening, even though that might not be the quote unquote an official version of history. So in my mind, there's nobody who should be writing these characters other than Fred Van Lente. And this story is a really fun one. Basically, the premise is once a year, Armstrong's wine vault opens. He has at least one bottle of wine for every year he's been alive, so thousands and thousands of bottles. And there's also flashback to Noah. And those are the Derek Robertson pages, with Armstrong telling his version of the Great Flood and this and that. And then the Cafu art is the modern day. And so he's invited Quantum and Woody, Faith, Archer, and Punk Mambo to this wine tasting that he gets to do once a year. And what's interesting is he set the vault up with 4002 technology. Actually, he had his brother Ivar, the Time Walker, set it up, and Ivar is actually the only one who can open it. And they only drink a few bottles, because if you take too many, the vault seals itself. There's all kinds of other crazy little tidbits in here, but the story ends up being much like Fred Van Lente's run on Archer and Armstrong, fun, irreverent, and at times very poignant. There's a couple of good scenes with Armstrong and his brother Ivar, who apparently they're at odds at this time for one reason or another. There's also some really cool scenes with Armstrong back dealing with Noah and that whole situation, as well as a really great page that doesn't even have much dialogue on it with Armstrong and Neela, who her and Ivar are kind of star-crossed lovers, and what happened with her is a whole another story that I'll get into on another podcast, what happened between her and Ivar. But she's partly the reason that Ivar and Armstrong aren't really getting along in this issue, and Armstrong does something with Neela's help for Ivar, but Armstrong doesn't even tell him. I don't know, maybe he thinks it'll lead to even more hard feelings or whatever, but it's a great way Van Lente uses this plot device to really show that even though Armstrong comes across as this frat boy kind of party animal who just wants to drink his way through history, that he really does care about the people in his lives, you know, especially his brother. So it's a really fun issue. The art by both Cafu and Derek Robinson is top notch. The colors are done well. There's a real shift in colors between the stories told in the past with Armstrong and his involvement with Noah and his family versus the more modern colors for the modern time. So definitely recommend this issue. Get out to your comic shop, pick it up. I don't know how much Archer and Armstrong, Fred Van Lente is going to do in the future. So I'm definitely going to be picking this up because, as I said, I think Fred Van Lente is born to write these characters. And I really hope we get more Fred Van Lente, Archer, and Armstrong in the future. So those are the books that I wanted to spotlight. Let me just run down the list of a few other books that I think are worth a look. From Aftershock this week, we have Monstro Mechanica, Issue 3. And that's continuing to tell an alternate history tale in and of itself, this time about Leonardo da Vinci. Also from Aftershock, we have an Animosity coloring book. Next book I'm going to mention is Mech Cadet U, number 6, from Boom Studios. That's written by Greg Pak and art by Takeshi Miyazawa. And this was my best new series. It's a whole lot of fun, good for readers of all ages, especially young readers, about a boy and his, I guess you'd call it a pet robot. So that's been a really fun book so far. From DC, we have Batman number 40 from Tom King. I believe the art is by Joel Jones in this particular issue. Let me double check that. Yes, Joel Jones. And this is the conclusion, part two of the story that started in Batman 39, where Batman and Wonder Woman are fighting an endless horde. And while only hours pass on Earth, decades pass on the world where they're fighting this endless horde. And, you know, Manny was all up in arms about whether or not Batman was going to and Wonder Woman were going to have a physical relationship, being that they've left behind everything they know for years and years on end. And Manny was pretty upset about that. So I'd be anxious to hear his thoughts on Batman 40, whether that actually went down. Also, the next issue of Batman White Knight, number 5 of 8, from comic creator Sean Gordon Murphy, comes out today. Other DC comics of note, we have the Superman number 40 that I mentioned, the Swamp Thing Winter Special number 1 that I mentioned, and there's also, just in time for Valentine's Day, a Young Monsters in Love giant. It's $9.99. Let me check and see how many pages it is. I would imagine it's at least 80 pages if it's that size. It's got creators like Paul Dini, Guillaume March, the aforementioned Kelly Jones. Doesn't say how many pages here, but I imagine it's got to be at least 80 if it's that price point. All right, I also want to mention from Image Comics, Rose number 8, which continues to be a really, really good series from Meredith Finch and Ig Guara. Still hoping to have Meredith on at some point to talk about the series. And the other Image book that I'll mention is Witchblade number 3. That's the Witchblade reboot from Top Cow. And I feel like this issue 3, it's going to start pulling together a lot of the events that we saw in the first two issues, and it's going to start moving forward with the character Alex, who is now the bearer of the Witchblade, starting to kind of embrace her role, I guess you'd say. Oh, and actually one other book I'll mention from Images Versus from Ivan Brandon and Esad Ribak. Wars Become a Spectator Sport, Privately Funded Armies March into Battle for Fame and Profit. It's been getting a lot of buzz, a lot of people talking about it. So if you want to get in on the ground floor, issue 1 should be in comic shops today. Over at Marvel, we have the continuing No Surrender storyline going on in Avengers with issue number 679 coming out. I've been hearing a lot of really good things about this, so I'm going to get a chance to read it and catch up pretty soon. And that's really a who's who list of really good creators. Mark Waid, Jim Zub, Aaron Kim Jacinto, Mark Brooks is on the cover. So it's been an interesting, from what I hear, an interesting story. I know a little about it, but I won't spoil that here. Maybe we'll do a spotlight on it, recommended reading or something, with Manny joining me. The countdown to Daredevil 600 continues with Daredevil number 598 coming out tomorrow from writer Charles Soule. And I think the artist on that issue is the artist that started Daredevil with him when he took over the book, and that's Ron Garney. Also, She-Hulk 162 comes out today. That's from writer Mariko Tamaki, and it's the next to last issue of the story. It's She-Hulk trying to basically regain control over the raging monster within her. Sound familiar? Yeah, I thought so. So again, I think I mentioned this when I talked about She-Hulk a few episodes back, and I really feel like it's harkening back to the classic Peter David run where Doc Samson managed to integrate the Hulk's different personalities, the Gray Hulk, the Green Hulk, and Bruce Banner himself kind of into one. And it lasted, you know, for a good long time. It's that famous neon green cover of issue 377 that a lot of us that collected comics at in the early 90s will remember. And finally, from Marvel, I'll mention X-Men Red number 1. Another X-Men team. Jean Grey is back. We've got Nightcrawler, Namor, and Laura Kinney on that team as well. So it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, we've now got an X-Men Red, an X-Men Blue, and an X-Men Gold. So should be plenty of X-Men to go around. And I will say that the Travis Cherré cover has me interested enough to pick up that. I really like the way that cover looks. And it's Tom Taylor and Mahmoud Asrar on interior art. So, you know, they're a couple really good creators as well. So I'll probably give this a look. Problem is, I'm so far behind on my X-Men history and where they are. It's been probably a good 15 years since I've been caught up on X-Men. So, you know, I tried to jump in on X-Men Gold and X-Men Blue and just, you know, try to get caught up and kind of just keep reading it and figure out what's been happening by just reading the books and going forward. But it's been rough. And in all honesty, I'm not caught up even now. I've only read about the first 4 or 5 issues of each one. And it was just, it's not a book that comes to the top of my stack because I felt so lost. So it may be that I need to go back a lot further. That being said, I'll take a look at this. Like I said, just based on the Travis Cherré cover alone, probably be picking that up. All right. And then the next book I'll mention is from Valiant Comics, and that's the Archer and the Vault of Spirits number 1 they have coming out that I just talked about in depth. And the other Valiant release that's coming out, we talked about on our Valiant episode this last Sunday, and that's Secret Weapons Deluxe Edition hardcover. So that's all 4 issues of the Secret Weapons miniseries, plus a lot of extras in a hardcover for $24.99. So that's going to wrap it up for this episode of New Comics Wednesday. Don't forget to go check out the Jeremy Dale Skyward Kickstarter and get out there to your local comic shop and tell me what you're picking up. Tell me what you're reading. Tell me what I'm missing. Love to hear from you guys. So thanks for joining me, everybody. Please go to thecomicsourceblog.com for all past episodes of the podcast. Twitter.com/thecomicsource is where you can find us on Twitter. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to keep up to date on all our convention coverage and to make sure you know when all the new episodes are being released. Don't forget about our weekly podcast over at LRM Online, The 9-Panel Grid, which comes out every Tuesday. And while you're there, you can check out LRM Online's coverage of other pop culture, TVs, movies, video games, all that good stuff. There's tons and tons of content over there. So really appreciate it, and we'll talk to you next time.